Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy and trivia podcast. I am Nate Regolia. Each week, my wonderful co-host and I discuss things that we're watching on the television in a time of coronavirus. It's like a Gabriel Garcia Marquez book, but way less cool. With me, as always, is Shannon Page. Shannon, how are you?
TV in the time of corona.
Yeah.
I'm good. I am good.
Good.
It doesn't sound like it, but I am.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm beginning to become skeptical of anybody who sounds too good right now, because it's like, we should all still be kind of like, I have a sidebar premise before we get into what we're going to talk about, which is, have you watched any of the SNL at home episodes?
I haven't watched any of the full episodes, but I've seen a couple of clips.
Mm-hmm. So what clips have you seen?
I saw Brad Pitt being Dr.
Fauci.
And I saw the news. And I saw the Zoom, learning how to use Zoom.
With the A.D. Bryant and,
And Kate McKinnon, yeah.
Kate McKinnon.
Am I zooming? And, and I think they also did one last week that was, like, the supermarket with stuff that we still have. That
really
was good.
Funny. Yeah. We still have salmon-flavored toothpaste. what I was going to say is, like, Jenny and I have talked about this, and feel pretty much like this version of SNL is actually kind of funnier than the regular because they're all just doing these one-off things. I don't know how much collaborative writing they're doing. I'm liking envisioning that each person is just writing their own sketch and just emailing it, and people are like, yeah, that looks good, go ahead and record it, and they're like, great, and they throw it together. But there's something so like wacky about it. Last week there was What Up With That, which is one of my favorite ongoing things, where Kenan Thompson hosts a show called What Up With That, where they just keep singing. But there's a whole like weird dancing element where Jason Sudeikis used to be like doing the Running Man in a tracksuit and everything.
I feel like, and I remember that, yeah.
They got both Fred Armisen and Sudeikis to be in this. So you just have like a bunch of windows popping up and they're doing, it's, I don't know. There's something that's kind of refreshing about it. So the way that I segue back into talking about this show is, do you think this show is more entertaining this way? Or do you think the standard format with the game show and everything is the better version? What do you think?
I think our standard format is the better version.
Yeah, probably so. It's a little more organized. This is really us relying on the fact that we have a whole lot of cachet with listeners that they want to hear what we're doing right now.
Yeah, that they just want to hear our opinions on what we're watching on Netflix.
Yeah, and honestly, I think they do. People are still listening, so that's good. We're getting real close to 4,000 downloads. That's exciting.
Woo! That's impressive. Like, we're still holding on.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna put something out here now. This is something I've heard from other podcasts. So if you go to iTunes and review this show and give us 5 stars, you can write the roastiest of roasting reviews of this show, and we will read it on the air. I will look if there are some to read. I will read them at the top of the show. You can talk about how I sound like a slimy used car salesman or something. I don't know. There's not really anything bad you can say about Shannon, so don't even try. But you could go to town on us. It would be funny. What do you think?
My mom says I laugh too much. You can add to that. You can let us know if you agree or not.
Yeah, there you go. Does Shannon laugh too much? Tell us in the comments. Blow up our DMs, as they say. So exciting news for me today is we got new internet. That is partially why, it is primarily why I am video chatting with you right now, because I haven't had a single hiccup in anything since we started this.
Oh, that's exciting.
Have you heard any hiccups?
No.
See? Okay. We upgraded to the company Starry which we do not have a sponsorship with, but I'm just going to mention them anyway. So yeah, we had CenturyLink. We were getting 12 megabytes a second. With Starry, we're getting up to 200 for $5 more than we were paying CenturyLink.
Damn.
So that's pretty exciting, right?
That's good. I use the Google WebPass.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, some buildings don't, our building doesn't get that.
Yeah, you have to be in an apartment building that has signed up for it. Which I think if enough people in the building write in, they'll do it. Because I remember when I first looked it up, my building wasn't doing it either. And then a couple months later, I got a notification that they were going to show up.
They were like, you're on Google WebPass now.
And like, you can do it now. But I have to say, it is not very expensive. And I haven't had a single bad experience since I signed up with them like a year and a half ago. And especially during all this pandemic stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so, I mean, I'm
sorry, and Google are... Xfinity, yeah. Xfinity alternates. If you're wanting to get away from Xfinity,
you know, just we gotta shake things up, right? You gotta have
it. There should be multiple options.
There should be hundreds, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all about not giving it to the monopoly.
Yeah.
So I give it to Google. Right.
I mean, they used to have an honorable modus operandi, so that's good.
Some people, I feel like in the world of supplying internet, Xfinity is the lesser of, Google is the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think as far as evil goes, it goes Comcast, then CenturyLink, then kind of Google, and then I don't know. Starry's still like they have $63 million in funding, so they're not little, but like no company can really provide anything without $63 million, I don't think, because our money is meaningless. So, hey, let's just smoothly segue into the theme of the show this evening. There is a new documentary on Netflix called Circus of Books that highlights the bookstore in Los Angeles, Circus of Books, that is a hardcore gay pornography vendor. And it talks about the history of this store and the really kind of interesting older couple who have run it for, had run it for 40 something years. While also putting a spotlight on the historical struggle of the gay community, the ways that we've kind of pushed people aside, and then even talking about like, what are the rules around free speech? What about, you know, decency and all these other things. It's really, really interesting. Shannon, do you have any impressions on the parts that you were able to see?
Yeah, I thought the parts I was able to see. So I only got through about an hour of it because I started it about an hour ago. So
you guys, listeners, you guys are hearing this live up to the minute.
I'm gonna watch it while we're recording this.
Yeah, just put it on. Turn it up really loud.
No, I thought that my impression, and you can tell me how much they dive into this, but it seemed to me like the documentary was about the bookstore, video store itself, and how important it was to the LGBT at the time community. Now it's LBGTQ. IA plus. But I'm just gonna say LGBT because that's what it was when the bookstore was when the bookstore started.
And I think we've demonstrated a track record of like we're cool. We're good with every single letter and acronym possible. We're allies. Like we're not misspeaking out of ignorance, just out of brevity.
Well, out of laziness too, which is not the best thing to be doing, but I acknowledge that it's my own laziness that's not letting me say the whole thing. But anyway, how important this bookstore was to the community at the time, and how I mean, I didn't realize it was kind of before Stonewall that it was a big gathering place for protests and that sort of stuff. But, and tell me if they touch on this, the woman that ran the store was totally homophobic. And yeah. to her, it might as well have been like a grocery store. Like, she didn't care what the product was. She just figured out that she had this product that was selling, and she was like, I can sell anything. And that it just kind of seemed to be this weird coincidence that they ended up running this store.
Yeah.
For any love for the community, not for any like interest in their product. It was just more like, oh, we fell into this situation and it works well for us.
Yeah. The wild thing is, so, you know, this documentary starts with a story. The two people who run it, and for some reason I didn't bother to write their names down. That's pretty weak of me.
Martin, I think. The documentary was made by the daughter.
Yes. Yeah, the daughter did it. The butler did not.
So the whole time the kids were growing up, their parents owned the store, and they didn't even know really what it was.
Yeah, they had no idea. To your point, so it's striking that, okay, so Barry Mason and his wife Karen are the two, they are the two owners. So what's striking is, yeah, the documentary opens by giving their backstories. Karen is a journalist, and she's kind of a badass. Like, both of these people are really interesting people on their own right. Like, mm-hmm. she's a journalist, she's interviewing Larry Flint, she's like, you know, she's big into like obscenity culture and the resistance of that and everything. And then you've got, I guess, like, she interviewed or did, wait, did she interview baby Jim Morrison? Baby Jim Morrison was involved in this.
No, that was Barry. The husband went to film school with him.
And they made
student films together.
This guy that runs the store makes student films with Jim Morrison. He also ends up doing special effects for 2001 A Space Odyssey and Star Trek, the original series. And then he becomes like a medical inventor. He's inventing medical devices. This is basically supporting their family at that point. And then suddenly the malpractice lawsuits kind of build up. It's sort of the late 70s. And he has to pick a new, they have to pick a new job. Like, he can't continue to produce things. So this store just kind of falls in their lap, like you said. And there is a really interesting sequence where Karen is going through like a sex toy show.
Yeah, that's where I realized this place was to her.
And she's just like, she's flying through. She's got like a list. She's just walking up. She's like, which of these things sell well? Great, I'll take those. And the guy's like, well, we got these new things that are really popular. She's like, no, those don't, new things don't sell. I just want, just give me this stuff. And there's a great moment where she's like, this is a good order. Fill this for us. This is a good order. And the guy like rolls his eyes to the camera, but not to her.
and at one point she's walking by like a wall of dildos and she kind of gestures towards them and she's like, this is the kind of stuff we sell. I don't like to look at it, but feel free to show it on camera and let me know when you're done.
Yeah, so you've got this like, there's this kind of interesting conflict because the guy Barry seems pretty into it, honestly. Like, I don't know. Like, he's not, I think it's still a business for him, but he's more like fun. And then Karen is just like, this is just a way that we make money. The end. Bottom line. So as we get later into the documentary, I don't know if you got there, but like one of her sons comes out and this causes a big conflict because she was raised fairly Orthodox Jewish. And so she kind of has she has an issue with it. And she sort of expresses that like she never thought about like the people who worked for her were just people who worked for her. And the store was just the store. And then suddenly all of these things become real because your son is actually gay.
In your life. So, yeah, I didn't get that far at all.
Yeah. It's interesting because it is on the whole, it's a really beautiful kind of story about these people and this store and its meaning that, yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know, I just have a lot of random notes about the thing. Like they showed some clips from a early gay porn film called Striker Force that I was looking at it, I was like, this looks a lot like a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie from the 80s. Like, it doesn't look, as far as production values or dialogue or what's going on, it's like, this could just have JCVD in it. He could just pop in and be like, okay, I'm ready to fight.
I mean, it is how Sylvester Stallone got his start.
That's right.
They produced it, though. Didn't the Masons produced Striker Force?
Yes, that's right, because they were running, they were also running some gay porn production, which is wild. Like, it's so interesting, the purely sort of capitalistic bent of their endeavor, that like, hey, there's just a market for this and we might as well do it because
yeah, let's do it.
And no one else is going to. One of my favorite parts of the movie is that Ronald Reagan is one of the primary villains, because he should be remembered as one of the primary villains of our human history.
That is true.
Because, you know, it's just all about this kind of Christian identity politics that we're living in again right now, which is someone comes out and says that this thing is fundamentally against who we are, or let's fictionalize what the past was like so that we can act like we're going back to a past that was perfect, even though there's no perfect past and everything's always been complicated, nuanced, and insane. So yeah, that was fun. What were you gonna say?
I don't remember.
Okay. There was a quote that Karen had that was interesting too, that was paraphrased, that freedom of speech is protected by the most extreme examples, which I want to talk about that for a minute, because I think that's an interesting thing. And I felt conflicted about it, because on one hand, I think that's wonderful and I completely agree. And on another hand, it terrifies me. because like the extreme example of, say, pornography or, Satanism or whatever, right? Like, those extreme examples are one kind of thing, but they're also coming from a place of less power, I guess, maybe. And then there's the other extreme example, which is maybe the president currently, who says extraordinarily extreme things that are all protected under freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that, Shannon?
I 100% agree that the price of our freedom of speech is giving it to everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was raised by a journalist, so freedom of speech was always implanted in me how important it is. And unfortunately, the cost of that is that you have, you know, my mind always goes back to the khaki white boy rally in,
yeah.
Which Carolina was it? North or South?
Oh, the Charleston thing?
Charleston. Yeah, where's Charleston?
In Virginia.
Virginia? It's not a Carolina? God,
that
I don't
know. That was the Tiki Torch dudes.
The Tiki Torch dudes, yeah. I mean, that sucks and I hate them, but, you know.
Charlottesville. Not Charleston. Charlottesville. Also still Virginia, but gosh, you know.
But
we've been locked up for so long.
We understand what we're saying. But I mean, we kind of touched on this last week too, talking about the protesters that are right now protesting the stay-at-home orders.
Yeah.
And you know, I think again, it's stupid, but I think it is their right to do that. You know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. 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 I think the battle always becomes the recognition of. At some point, our task is in recognizing the volume of people who are doing it, because especially now, I think part of what we're confronting in this modern era is that when everybody has access to a pulpit, to the ability to broadcast their views everywhere, it's easier to make it sound like a viewpoint is more widely held than it might actually be, which makes, I mean, it poses serious concerns about how freedom of speech functions in the way that it was written in the Constitution originally, in the Bill of Rights originally, because you're really talking about, like, you know, it was one thing to be able to tell people in your town what you thought or to print flyers. It's another thing to be able to, like, well, for $10,000, I can basically force my ideas down everybody's throat on social media for like a month. And they don't really have any choice, and a bunch of people will just be like, oh, well, this is a thing because someone said it, which is weird. And it's not in even as clean as that. I mean, my examples are extreme in their own right. But yeah, I think it's interesting because we find ourselves constantly confronting this idea, and then, you know, I wonder what it would be like. Like, the UK has laws around advertising, right, where you can't say certain things. So you can't claim that a product does something better than other products when it doesn't. Where most of American advertising is based entirely on, like, our thing is better than their thing because it's got more lemon power, you know, whatever.
When I was a kid, I thought there was a law that you couldn't lie in a commercial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, they said it, so, and you're not allowed to lie, so it must be true.
Yeah. It's like, no.
Nope, they're allowed to lie. They're allowed to lie.
Yeah.
Well, I think also that it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was looking at something recently about possibly having sleep apnea, which I don't have, but for a while I thought I might. And I was doing all this research online, and I found a couple of articles about it and about, like, how your pillows need to be set up and how you need, like, these different mattresses. And a lot of the articles were on a site, sleep.org.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine that is very questioning of everything always was like, yeah, look, I think you should look who runs sleep.org. He's like, oh, you know, we've never heard of that. You should probably look that up. And I looked it up, and it's owned by, like, one of the mattress companies.
No way. Yeah.
So they've got all these, like, scientific articles about, like, how to sleep better. And then at the end of the day, you don't realize that they're basically pushing you into, like, buying new mattresses. And then, of course, they're going to help you pick out, like, Serta or whatever it is.
Yeah, but, Shannon, that just reminds me, it's time to plug our sponsor, Casper Mattresses. You ever wanted to sleep with a ghost? Casper.
Yeah. Oh, and here it is. Yeah, I just looked it up. So it's sleep.org is the National Sleep Foundation.
Yeah.
And I think if you... Yeah, so then you have to look up who the National Sleep Foundation is.
A little trip to GuideStar, figure that one out.
Well, I don't want to make you sit here while I look it up, but the gist of it is that you've got to, yeah, I mean, not only is there free speech, but there's free speech that might not be what you think it is, and that's part of the other price of free speech is taking on the responsibility yourself to vet your sources and to figure out what is real, if you care about that.
Sure.
If you don't care about that, that's the other thing about free speech, it's also free listening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's interesting is it's even easier to publish now than ever, because even in the context of this documentary, like, you had to go into a store and buy a thing. Like, they had to make a physical piece of media, whether it was a film or a DVD or a magazine, like that, but it had to exist. Right. And now we're in an era where you don't even have, like, you and I could set up a .org website and a nonprofit organization, and we could commission some scientific research based around our beliefs, politically, ideologically, however, and we could publish that, and it would become part of the conversation, even if it isn't really reasonable that it become part of the conversation, or you know, even if it isn't quite as thoughtful. I think that's what's interesting is that really we live in an era where you really, really, really have to double check and triple check and quadruple check and figure out, oh, I mean, when it comes to this, to the current pandemic, you know, the people I've seen on Facebook who are posting, some people have posted the 5G thing. Some people have posted about, other sort of conspiratorial stuff about how, oh, this is how it starts. You know, they see how long they can keep you from doing things and then they take everything away. Right. And it's like, yeah, I can see that. But we do, I guess the main thing is we live in a time of confirmation bias. So if what you're looking for is to be right, you can find out that you're right very easily. If you want to be actually accurate and correct, you have to do a lot more work, and it's difficult. Because, yeah, I mean, you could have easily read yourself into buying a sleep apnea machine and being like, okay, I must have a problem. And it's like, well, you don't.
Or a new mattress.
Yeah, or a new mattress. It's a weird time. Anyway, so yeah, this documentary is really, really interesting. There's, you know, I don't have a whole lot of notes after that because the big things with it is it's talking about having a home for the LGBT community and having, and also just how enigmatic it is to be a couple of people who don't really have any direct connection when you start it to that culture and running a store for 40 years, just as like, this is just what we do now. Especially at the end of the show, because, you know, they're talking like the store has shut down completely. Like they're out of business, but, you know, they're going through like these back rooms where it's just loads of DVDs, like loose discs. And she and you know, the daughter's holding the camera over, and she's going through, and she's just trying. She's like, "I'll try to find one that's not really, really dirty for you, so I can show you one of these discs." And she's just like, "I mean, it's literally like, I don't know. There's just CDs all over the place. It's crazy. It's a lot of fun. I would recommend seeing it for sure."
I like they interview people that have worked there.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of seems like it was the kind of place that, like Tower Records, like it was a cool place to work. Like you kind of wanted to work there if you could.
Yeah. Or Empire Records even.
Or Empire Records if you lived in fiction land.
Yeah. Don't we
one
all?
Of the, one of the employees that they interview was Alaska Thunderfuck.
Yeah.
Alaska Thunderpussy, depending on how you know her, from RuPaul's Drag Race. Who used to be an employee there, so that was kind of fun too.
Yeah, it was super. I mean, and just, yeah, there's so much goodwill in this, so many weird little factoids too. I mean, I don't want to spoil too much, but like one of the things that I thought was most clever is, you know, they're starting this, they got this bookstore, it's originally called Book Circus, and so they're like, okay, well, we got to call it something else. So to save money and to keep the sign, they call it Circus of Books, and they just cut the original Book Circus sign in half and then rearrange the sides. And he's like, yeah, we'll just buy an of, and then we'll be good. Which is just so funny. But it's a charming story. I mean, it ends up being a story about, you know, a mother's acceptance of her gay son. And it's also just a story of, like, realizing the impact you had on a community, even though you thought like, oh, well, this is just a job. This is just a business I have. I just needed to do something. And this was here. So yeah, I would highly recommend it. I'm going to give the documentary as a whole a 9 out of 10 because it's paced really well. And it's over before you know it, Shannon, it'll almost be over before you know it. And yeah, it's just, it was an interesting piece of history. Shannon, what would you give your the section you've viewed so far?
I mean, I can't rate something I've only seen half of, but I'll tip my hat to your 9.
All right. Tip it to the 9. Great. Yeah. I was trying to think, what else have you been watching over the last week?
Oh man. I have been binging Key and Peele.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a good show.
I got a hold of all the episodes, and I think I've watched like 4 seasons of it in like 5 days.
That's great. Have you already seen the one where they're like pulling guns on each other, and then they pull the people pull their masks off and their guns they're just actually guns on torsos? Have you seen that?
I've seen that one because okay. I've seen it before, but I haven't gotten to that one yet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, what have we've been watching a lot of 90 Day Fiancé. Have you watched any of that?
I love that. I haven't watched the latest season, but I've seen everything else.
Yeah, we've only gone through the first 2 seasons. So hey, let's talk about that for a minute. Because I'm sure you remember. So
Carolyn and Muhammad?
Yeah. Yeah, so that them from season 2 is crushing.
Yeah.
It's just so obvious the whole time. Like, I've never, I mean, outside of a John Hughes movie, I have never been so explicitly aware of how little interest someone has in another person and how yet for some reason it's not landing. It's brutal.
I can't even tell you more about them because it would just be spoilers. Let's just say they're on the season two is not the last you see of them.
I mean, I can only imagine, like, it's got to be a constant train wreck. Like, they would be foolish not to keep following up with them. You know, and we accidentally started, like, Happily Ever After or something. I can't remember, but there was a little bit of that where she's, like, she's pursuing him to the place where he works in Texas to go talk to him. And I was like, I don't think this is the show we think it is.
Yeah, I don't think you can watch Happily Ever After until you've finished season two of 90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah, we just did, so that's good.
So now you can start Happily Ever After, I think.
Great. I mean, we should check it out because I think there might be some people from later seasons on that as well, but maybe not.
No, well, that's why I was trying to figure out. Maybe it's at the end of season three of 90 Day Fiancé you can start watching Happily Ever After.
Okay. Yeah, because so season one has some really interesting situations. I mean, mainly Alan and Curium.
Is that the Mormon guy that was grooming his wife since she was like 10 years old?
Yeah. So he's a 29-year-old Mormon guy, and like we're watching him just like she has an opportunity to model, and he's immediately just like, I don't want modeling to take you away from me. And it's just so all over the place.
The thing is about them is that they seem like a normal couple until like episode five or six when it comes and they talk about how they met in her country when he was there and blah, 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 blah. And then like season five, you start to realize that like when they met, she was like 10 and he was like 19.
Yeah, because he would have been on his mission trip and Mormons traditionally go after high school.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they met under auspicious circumstances, to say the least.
Yeah, and they basically spent the next 7 years of her life preparing her to come to America to marry him.
It's really weird just because it's so, I don't know. I mean, a lot of this show really revolves around possessiveness in men when it comes to marriage to women,
I mean, look at Danielle.
Well, yeah, I mean, but she's like desperate and sad and I mean, it is possessiveness, but it's also, I don't know. I just can't imagine that she's not like just hardcore deluding herself, because that's kind of all you have to be. Like, that's all you'd have to, like, I've been in bad relationships where I liked the other person more than they liked me, but it never got to the point of me being like, oh, hey, it's cool that you said that I'm acceptable looking and that you and that you want to be with me 60% because of love, but 40% because of the adventure of coming to a new country. Like,
well, but you've got to look at it on the other side though, too, is that, yeah, part of me watches this show and I do think it goes both ways. Both men and women want somebody that they kind of have a bit of control over. And that's why they decide to bring these people over from other countries. And that's not to say that there aren't some couples on 90 Day Fiancé that I actually do believe are actual couples.
Russ and Paola from the first season were good. They were good together. Like, they, it was like... this.
What's her face?
Who'd you say? Sorry.
And the IMDb page for 90 Day Fiancé is so screwed up.
The Wikipedia page is broken down very nicely.
Oh, is it? Okay. The girl who went to Israel for her like summer camp and met like the Russian guy that she fell in love with.
Oh, I don't think we're there yet. But yeah,
they're season two. Are they from season two?
Well, there's like, so there's like Chelsea and Ymir from season two. She's the blonde girl from like Illinois who goes to Nicaragua and meets the pop star and then brings him up.
Yeah, no, they're terrible. But here's my thing. Going back to what I was saying though, these people that, so you watch it and you're like, oh, this person is being taken advantage of. Like you watch Danielle and you're like, oh my goodness, Muhammad is taking advantage of her. This is a terrible situation. But she's also taking advantage of him because she basically wants a really good looking, attractive, like typically attractive guy that she can control. So, I mean, they're both in that equation, terrible people. And that's most of it. Every time I start to feel sorry for one of them, I always remember that they're also trying to get, they're, you know, both sides of this are trying to get something out of the other person.
Yeah. I think the most, like, so to your point.
Oh, there's season three. Yeah. Lauren and Alexi. Never mind. Okay. I think they're a real couple. Lauren and Alexi are great when you get to them.
Cool. I can't wait.
They're a real couple. They're a real couple.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, you know, through seasons one and two that we've watched, I kept going like, God, I mean, do these people, whether male or female, who are coming from another country, like, are they getting the whole story of how this other person lives? Because if it's like, because I feel like a lot of the love that happens in a international video sort of capacity, or like super long distance, very little actually hanging out, is that one, it's vacation love. So every time that you're actually present with each other, there are absolutely no real responsibilities. It is this super suspended reality where everybody just gets to, they get to be whoever they want. Everybody is the vacation version of themselves, right? Like beards growing, no job, no bills, whatever. So there's that problem. The other problem is that, you know, I wonder like how much anybody who's in the States on this show, how well they represent themselves. Like to your point about like Danielle and Muhammad or even, you know, Alan and Kurium, it's like, does she know that you like, you live in a one bedroom apartment in LA and it's really not very nice and you're kind of, you know, or does he know that you have a two bedroom house with nine people in it?
In the middle of nowhere and you're thousands of dollars in debt and
and this speaks to sort of the global media perception of America beyond our current sadness because I think we're perceived horribly, but you know, I think most people identify the United States as New York and LA and maybe Chicago, but it's like, it's cities, it's glitz, it's glamour, it's people who are all these things. And then inevitably, like not, I mean, even the people who are in major cities are not major city dwelling in the sort of media way, in the sort of character way, right? So you're talking to somebody who's saying like, oh yeah, you know, I live in Oklahoma and da da da, and it's like this. And it's like, well, what is it actually like? And then you show up and you're like, oh, We're tailgating? That's what we're doing? I thought that we would like go out and dance or, you know, whatever. Like it's really interesting because there is, it's so much of it is misrepresentation. And then the other end is, you know, I don't know if you've had any pseudo relationships in your life where you sort of were like emailing with somebody for a while and like you got an idea about how things were and it was different from how things actually were. But I think that's the underlying premise of this show that I haven't, and again, only through two seasons, but I'm wondering, is someone going to step in and be like, hey, you know, there's something that happens when people don't actually spend time together and create these ideas of each other. And then you actually have to be in person with someone. And you're like, oh, we're very different in practice than we are in the fantasy of.
Well, I think it's sweet that you're giving a lot of these people the benefit of the doubt that they actually are trying to form a relationship.
That's fair too, yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of them are, I don't care who this person is, I'm going.
Right.
Who this person is, they're coming. Like, I got me a good-looking girl from another country that's going to be completely reliant on me. I don't care if we have a relationship or not. Or I got me a good-looking guy from another country. Or I got me a girl that's you know gonna get me that green card. I feel like the majority of the couples on 90 Day Fiancé I very much appreciate what you said about how maybe the relationship isn't what they thought it was, but
I don't think there was one. No, I agree with you, because I don't think that it's always that it's not that the relationship isn't what they thought it was, but that it's very easy for two people on other sides of the world to completely suspend their understanding of reality and fall in this sort of digital love where they're like, oh, this is so great. Nothing's better than being able to talk to this person for 2 hours on my schedule, and then I go back to doing whatever I want to do by myself, right? Like in season two, there's the, I can't remember the guy's name. There's a guy in Florida and he's married. He's 38 and the girl he brings up is like 22 or 24. But there's a scene in this episode where she's like, hey, why do you have giant Tupperware containers of Playboys in your garage? And he's like, oh, because they're worth money and I'm a collector and I'm going to sell them. And she's like, well, I don't really like that. Would you go ahead and sell them? And he's like, well, I'll sell them when I want to. And it's just this sort of thing where it's like, yeah, I can see how he would be like, hey, it's great. I have a relationship, but I also have none of the responsibilities of a relationship. If this ever becomes real, it's going to be a problem. And then that's what happens, right? Is all of these people, when it becomes a real thing, all of the drama erupts because they didn't have a real thing in the first place. They just had a convenient conversation that was easy to turn off. And you can't turn off real relationships, right? Like,
man, you gotta get through season three so you can start watching Happily Ever After, because that's where the good stuff really happens.
Excellent. I can't wait. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know, the end of the season show on season two, and I hate these wrap-up reality shows where everybody's sitting on couches and they all have to talk to each other like they all give a damn.
I love it. Yeah. Oh, God, it's always so awkward. It's amazing.
That's a problem. It makes me uncomfortable.
The reunion shows at the end of the Happily Ever Afters are the best, because basically they just ask them all to judge each other. It's so great.
Yeah, and on the wrap up show for season two, Danielle and Muhammad are sitting there and they keep asking him, like, do you really love her? And he's like, you know, I don't think anybody here can say if they really love anybody. It's like, what the fuck is going on? Meanwhile, she is burying her face in his shoulder in what can only be a combination of, like, a reciprocal Stockholm syndrome. Because I don't think she's purely a victim. To your point.
Yeah, you gotta watch more. You gotta watch more of Danielle and Muhammad.
Jenny said the same thing. Like, everybody's batshit in this situation. I feel most bad for the kids. And then, of course, the thing is her kids are super chill and seem to get everything, and they're like, you know, I don't think he really likes her that much. It's like, yeah, good job. You guys are observing with the rest of us. I'm sorry this is happening to you.
No, that is the saddest, is when the kids get involved. Yeah. There's definitely couples with kids that are in worse situations than that, and that is sad.
So we've been watching that. We've also been watching watching Schitt's Creek as we go. We haven't finished anything yet. We're in season four. We just watched a couple of episodes with Simply the Best by Tina Turner in them, and both episodes were just stunningly wonderful. I love that show. It's really great. Are you watching Win the Wilderness yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I don't know. It looks like it might be good, but it might be terrible. I'll have to give it a try.
Yeah, people building lean-tos and cabins, it looks like.
I like Alone. Have you ever seen Alone?
No, what's that?
It looks like it might be kind of like that, except I think Alone is actually a lot more hardcore, where they take a bunch of people and they drop them off in the woods or in whatever wilderness the show has decided to do that season. There's like 8 seasons of it. And it's like 6 people separately. They're all miles apart. They don't know where anybody else is. They're alone. That's being the name of the show.
Except for the camera crews and the people with the GPS who know where they are.
And they, they're filming themselves. But they do have stat phones that they can contact. When they're only allowed to take 6 things with them. plus like a standard pack that they all get. But for the most part, they only have like 8 possessions.
Okay. Wow.
Like 2 of which are like bear repellent and like bear horn. Cause like,
you gotta call the bears and then repel them. Because
bear horn.
Dating is complicated in the woods. You know?
But basically, it's whoever wins is whoever stays out the longest. And so they have no idea how many people are still in. They're just trying to survive. Some of them are eating like worms and living under like a palm. And some of them like build cabins out of like bricks and build ovens and bathrooms and stuff. Like, it's crazy.
So it's like the later chapters of the Hunger Games.
It is like the later chapters of Lord of the Flies, if no one had ever come to get them.
Oh, no.
No, that's actually fighting. But
do they kill an overweight boy and steal his glasses?
No, because they're alone.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Let's see, there's 6 seasons. I want to see if it says like how long the longest person has ever been out there, because I feel it's like months. So let's see. Yeah, contestants can select 10 items.
Okay.
On a list of 40. So it's not like you can bring anything.
Oh, it's not a like your desert island top 10 items.
No, this is like, here's a list of 40 things, you can choose 10 of them.
Oh, it's like the beginning of Oregon Trail, the computer game.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, I mean, how many axles do I want? Do I want food? Should I take bullets?
So let's see, I'm looking. No spoilers, 6 seasons. It looks like you can expect to see 2 months each season at least.
Jeez. That's wild.
Living with like nothing.
I mean, I kind of like that idea. I don't know how long I can.
Yeah, in season 1 I watched it. There's a guy who taps out. That's what they call it when you call the stat phone after 1 day because I think he had a tent. And I think a bear literally like sat outside of his tent for like 3 hours. And he was like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
Yeah. I think I would probably tap out in that situation.
But yeah.
I've seen Grizzly Man.
Like this, I like it. If it's like Survivor, then not so much.
You want a grittier vibe.
Yeah. I like the gritty wilderness ones.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Totally stupid, like Beverly Hill one. So, but yeah, if they're gonna be in nature, I want them to be like whittling.
Yeah, not just like, oh, I ran out of wine. I guess I have to go back. Oh man. Yeah. Okay. So even though it's not the premise of the show, I'm gonna ask you something, which is, what 5 items would you take into the woods with you? And they don't have to be practical items. You could just take 5 items. What are you going to take?
Into the woods with me?
Yeah.
A car.
Okay. Cool. Hey, why not? I mean, it might not be practical with no roads. You're going to stump it out, but
Then I use the car to drive to the local motel. Okay, if I'm actually going to be in the wilderness, God, you know what? I honestly have not been camping since I was like 8 years old with the Girl Scouts because I hated it so much. Like, not even joking. Like, I just don't. I don't go into the wilderness.
It's not always great. I mean, you need the right spot. It needs to be the right vista. I remember camping. I camped with my parents a lot when I was a kid. I haven't really camped since probably I was 18. Primarily because all the equipment costs a lot of money, and I don't really. Also, I haven't had a car in a long time, so it's just hard to get to remote places to put a thing.
I'm only half joking about the car too, because I don't understand sleeping in the open. Like, I want a locked door while I'm sleeping. I do not understand that.
You're not into just like a random mental hospital escapee coming up with his hook hand and just like scratching your tent right open.
Maybe I watched too many 80s slasher films as a kid, but I don't think I could ever sleep if I wasn't behind something metal with a lock on it. Yeah. That just wouldn't happen. I don't even really sleep with my windows open. And I live on the fifth floor.
I slept in a pickup truck at a rest stop in Nevada, I think, probably in junior year of college. We were driving out to visit a friend who had moved to San Francisco. So it was something off of Highway 80. So I was sleeping in the cab of this pickup. It was just like a Chevy, whatever, like a single cab, two-wheel drive pickup. I'm sleeping in the cab, and my friend John is sleeping in the bed of the truck. And I woke up at this rest stop to a person looking in the window, like up. I'm standing up on the Zoom to give Shannon a sense of what's going on, but like literally like face in the window, where I was like, "What the fuck are you? What are you doing? Why are you even looking?" And it wasn't a police officer. It wasn't someone who had any right to be like, "Hey, what are you doing in there?" It was just a weirdo. It's just not safe.
So you asked me what I'm going into the woods, I'm taking a car that I can lock myself into.
You could take a cabin if you want. I'll let you just take a cabin
with a locked door and a car to get out of there if I need to. And a pool.
Okay, cool. You need exercise and you gotta stay cool.
And I don't know, a hammock?
Great, okay.
Yeah. And let's see. Cabin with lock. I'll count that as two. Car, mm-hmm. Pool, hammock. That's my five.
Okay. I would take, I would take one of those like solar rain collector things. I really like those. I mean, it's not actually a rain collector so much as a water collector. It's basically like you use the heat from the sun to condense the water and the moisture in the air into water and collect it. So I'd have one of those because I think those are really neat. I would probably also take like...
I'm assuming that my cabin had plumbing. That's why I didn't worry about water.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fine. I'll give you that. You used it for two spots, so it makes sense.
Also electricity and Wi-Fi.
Okay. Wow. It's just a mountain villa. You're not even Ted Kaczynski-ing it. You're just hanging out like... You're just a Kardashian in Montana. but yeah, so I'd take the water, the water condenser, the solar water condenser. I would take probably like a crate of whiskey, because that's the only way I'm getting through all the time, is being able to like sip on that. I've got a source of water and I've got enough booze to just keep me like numb to the reality that I am alone and I am probably eating bark soon.
To dry up all that water you're collecting also.
Yeah. And I would take a fishing rod, assuming I'm near a lake. If I'm not near a lake, then I guess I'd have to take some sort of small firearm, because I'm not a bow and arrow person. I'm not going to cut my finger off trying to kill a deer.
You should watch Alone.
Yeah. No, well, that's the thing. I think
the guys that have fishing rods, sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's not a good thing.
No, that's the problem, right? Depending on where you are. Like you could be at a pond that has absolutely nothing in it, and so your fishing rod is useless. And then you have to walk 10 miles to find water that has fish in it. See, I get that. Trying to think. I mean, I guess, you know, I'd also just want like a box of like military rations. That would be simple. Just take like a box of those. You got like 2 months of that. It's gross. You parse it out. You hydrate it with some of the drip water. And then, probably like a physical, like an old iPod classic, like a 1 terabyte iPod that just has a bunch of music and podcasts on it.
So how are you going to charge that thing?
I mean, I'm sure I can like figure out a way to.
You need my cabin.
Yeah. Well, I'll find your cabin. I'm sure I can rub a couple of potatoes together. That's how that works, right? You can generate electricity pretty easily. Yeah, I mean, it's terrifying to think about what it would be like to live in the woods, isn't it? Because I kind of like, I like some of the idea, but I also think, no, I really don't want anything to do with being completely on my own for that. Not that we couldn't adapt to it, because certainly I think both of us are fully capable. of adapting to that reality.
I am perfectly happy, like, in this situation where I'm quarantined and I'm by myself in my space, but I do get really nervous being where there's no other people.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, because you hear distant wolf calls. So, you know, Shannon, this has been really good. This has been a fun episode. I'm happy that we got to talk through all these things. And listeners, I think you should definitely check out Circus of Books. It's worth the watch. Like I said, I gave it 9 out of 10. You know, it's by no means a perfect thing, but I think it's touching, and it says a lot about our culture and the nuances of our culture, right? How does capitalism and humanity mix together, and how does government cause us problems, etc. So yeah, so that was good, and we talked about some other stuff. It was a lot of fun too. Shannon, do you have anything that you would like to plug for this week's episode of the show?
Just continue to try and support local businesses. Stay home if you can. Even if the stay-at-home order, wherever you are, stops. If you don't have to go outside, you don't have to.
Yeah.
Nobody's making you.
Nobody's going to make you do it.
Let's make the right choice, even without the government telling us we have to do it. Let's make the right choice.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think the big thing is no one wants to have to go back into this in, say, July or August, where we're like, oh, we got to lock everything down again because another X 100,000 people are sick/dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one, I don't want to do any repeats. I'm cool with just, let's just 100% this level the first time if we can, or at least like 95%. We can leave a few collectibles behind, to use a video game parlance, but let's get it done. You know, our theme song, guys, is by Michael J. O'Connor. So I would encourage you to check out his music. That's michaeljoconnor@bandcamp.com. And we also have social media stuff. So you can check us out on Twitter at A Vague Idea Pod, on Instagram at A Vague Idea Podcast, and on Facebook at The A Vague Idea Podcast Online Group Thing, where we play Pommel Pomme de Terre Online, among other things. I will be posting a hilarious photo of all of us with our heads superimposed over the cast of Dinosaurs in promotion of the episode that was released the week that this was recorded. So it's really irrelevant for you. I don't even know why I said it.
You can go back and see it.
But you can listen to that episode if you haven't. So Shannon, do you have any parting thoughts? Any partying thoughts?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, this has been a lot of fun. We'll talk, you know, we'll figure out what we're going to do for next week.
Sounds good.
Okay. The power of Zoom nodding. So listeners, thank you so much for listening to the show. Please, stay inside. Do your best. Wear masks, guys. It's really not that hard. And if you're not going to wear masks, just try to do the 6 feet thing. 6 feet really isn't very far, and it's just sort of cool and respectful to do that right now. And then otherwise, let's all just take care of each other, and we'll get through this, I think. Bye-bye.
Bye. I think.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page and sometimes John Perros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy Books at readspaceboy.com.